And I think also a lot of people with trauma, even when they're triggered, like you were talking about having high functioning coping mechanisms, which is really depressing because, I know I went on using my coping mechanisms for 4 decades, very like way, way, way over the top high functioning. And I just assumed it was, I was a very ambitious person and, I liked the performance aspect of what I was doing. And it turns out that no, going home and then having a bunch of wine after a very high functioning day at the studio, kids, doesn't mean that I'm doing any better in the washing machine than anybody else. Welcome to Light in the Fog podcast. From Lucky Episode 13, we have an intense episode that deconstructs where our patterns and programming of behavior and coping originated. Was it our parents, their parents, society in general, capitalism, our biochemical makeup, past lives, all of it? Jenny and Trey discuss how we learned to recognize when we were activated, how to create space around it, and the beginnings of how to heal. The answer might just be roller coasters. All right. Jenny, boy,
Hello,
hello.
meow meow.
Meow, meow. Boy, howdy, has August been a trip, huh?
August has been garbage, but thankfully it's September
It's
now.
been.
So different timings
Yes.
all around, hopefully.
Hopefully, stepping into astrologically a different thing. And it all kind of works out nicely because the stuff we wanted to talk about today was patterns and how they work in, the meat suit and how they work in our parents and epigenetics and how it works in past lives. And yeah, I feel like August was really trying a lot of us to really look at our patterns and I don't know, maybe hopefully make some adjustments, but it can be really hard to make adjustments when you're in the middle of your patterns. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's well and fine to know what patterns I need to fix, but the actual fixing of the patterns has definitely been always the bane and biggest struggle of my life. I hear you, G.I. Joe, that knowing's half the battle, but man, that second half of that battle's been a doozy.
I think maybe knowing is like a quarter of the battle
Right, like half feels
and
very
like
freaking generous.
very generous because anybody can read a book or listen to I don't know, a lecture or something, but it's the what do you do with it afterwards. I was thinking a lot about that when I was preparing for this episode that yeah, like you can hear it a million times, and it's so what does it take for it to like the phrase I always use is wisdom is knowledge that lives in the body. So it's something that you can take ownership of, and it's only at that point that you can then act on things.
I like
Yeah,
that.
because it's not words that are just being said. It's like an reading classes, if the teacher tells you structure, how to do structure a million times, that's all fine and good. But it's not until maybe in the practice, or maybe you watch a movie yourself and then you're like, oh, wait, 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 this is what all that nonsense was. And then you get to have ownership of the tool.
Yeah, well, and actually doing it, it takes a lot, and it takes, like, especially when it comes to karma clearing or emotional clearing, like, which is part of the theme of today's episode as well. It takes a lot, and I think it takes our souls a long time to get to it. So maybe even if we're doing it in this life, doesn't mean we're necessarily the most used to this process yet.
Yeah. And this is something you and I talk about a lot, like the hope that because these tools are, I mean, they're being talked about on like reality TV shows and on TikTok, So it's jumped the, you know, what's that marketing term? You have the early adapters, mm-hmm. which was all the people in the 60s and the 70s. And then you finally jump the chasm into the mainstream. Well, we've hit mainstream, yeah. but then it's still very much like, how do you go from 100 yoga classes to actually being a yogi? That's the battle.
And then trauma gets involved and it's a whole different battle.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. And, you know, and I respect, like, they're talking, you know, everything seems to be trauma-informed now is the phrase. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're leaving space for the fact that, you know, trauma sometimes is just doing the driving. And the best you can do is just try to get your nervous system to calm down so that then you can go back to doing the, you know, the yogi work, for example. So extra layers of difficulty.
Yeah, definitely. And trauma can drive for a while without you necessarily realizing it, you know, because you can still function while trauma's driving. So sometimes you can. So yeah, it's yeah.
I spent most of my life not knowing that I was triggered. And then when I started getting into some remission patterns, then I would get triggered, and even that, it would take me months to be like, oh, wow, this other operating system has now come in, is running the show. Boo his. Yeah. How long does it usually take you to recognize that your trauma patterns are running?
See, I am just now recognizing my trauma patterns are running. And in fact, the reason August was hard is because August was me finally coming to terms with the fact that I've been trauma patterning for years and years and years and years now, and have just been cycling in and out of it. And because my vices are like high functioning vices, but they're ones that won't ruin my life, you know, that I can get away with. So it's like, I've been there. I thought I was driving, and then, you know, a couple trips later, you're just like, oh my God, I haven't been driving for the past 100 miles. I'll answer that maybe in a couple years when I've actually figured out how to quickly recognize it. Because now I'm just like, oh my gosh, I've been in and out of an addictive mindset for years now, you know, and it's exhausting.
And even when the addictions are triggered, you know, are running this show, they also have waves within them, mm-hmm. where you're like, oh, well, you know, I haven't drank this whole week. So yeah. I must be out of my triggering.
I'm better.
And, well, no, not necessarily.
Yeah.
Oh, honey, I'm sorry August was trash for us. I'm sorry that August was trash for most of the people I know in our audience. If it was trash for you.
It's okay. I mean, honestly, 2024 has just been that year, but there's been a lot of good to come out of August in 2024. So I'm hoping that the end of the year is a little brighter than the beginning was, as we move into that and move into, you know, Samhain, with all that. So we'll see. Or Samhain. I don't remember how it's pronounced. I don't know.
I think it's the second one.
Yeah, Samhain. I think so too.
Yeah, that sounds right to my ear. So, you know, one of the patterns that I do pay attention to is astrology patterns. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Pluto, which is the underground, which is all the things that were hidden or secret or things that we were in denial about all come forward. Mm-hmm. Hence having a year where we're just hearing tons and tons of stuff that has been going on in the background. And then also, you know, a lot of shadow work ends up getting done when Pluto is around because you can't help it because it's so present.
Yeah.
You know, and for those of us with the triggerings, you know, that's usually what that means is we're dealing with our trauma stuff. I don't think Pluto.
These astrological patterns happening on us, especially triggering our shadow work, will be mean that, like, we are doing shadow work without realizing it and without wanting to sometimes, you know, and that's the onus of shadow work. So yeah.
Yeah. I think most people go into shadow work kicking and screaming.
That's so true, bestie. So true.
I used to be able to just, you know, look at my shrink and be like, I'm here, aren't I? Yeah, turns out that's not the same thing as doing the work.
No. Showing up and doing the work Dang. Are two different things. Darn it.
Two different things, right? So I think the thing that we wanted to do in this episode was to talk about like where patterns come from and what kind of patterns, you know, that we certainly associate with, but also just examples that you at home could, like, it should be a bingo game, you know, like disassociation, B12, so that you can, I mean, that for me was one of the big revelations, is when I started hearing that, like, very, very officially, that a lot of my behaviors were accounted for and they were generated because of life experiences.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a game changer for me. And I feel like now, like the younger generations, you guys are like, well, duh. And I'm like, but we didn't have any of that growing up. So to have these conversations, especially for Gen Xers, I think is, I don't know, particularly meaningful, maybe.
Yeah, hopefully something good can come of it, at least.
We sound very tentative today, but darn it, like, we know a lot about these subjects.
Yeah,
we're
really seasoned, we promise.
we're seasoned trauma pattern experts, man. You know, and the other thing that I know that we wanted to talk about was, you know, certainly the epigenetics factor, but then also moving into, oh golly. So the place that I study all of this, they connect deeply with, something that Jesus Christ said, which is as above, so below. And it's this idea that if you can't clean up your material space, it's going to interfere with your spiritual space, but then it's also the reverse. In fact, even more importantly, it's the reverse, that if you can clean up your etheric space, your spiritual space, it's so much easier for your material self to, you know, to do healing, and to create better patterns. I mean, what else are humans? What else are animals in general except pattern makers and meaning makers?
Well, and
trying to do better.
And I feel like, you know, you bring up a good point about, you know, clearing your karmic energy and clearing your etheric space. And I don't think it's a practice that we as a society are very attuned to. And so because of that, it's very easy for us to have one set of bad patterns lead to another set of bad patterns rather than, you know, cleaning out that energy and cleaning out that space. It's just becoming a cycle again. And then your head's above water for a second, and then you go back right into the cycle because you're not cleaning anything out. You're just patterning through, you know, spinning in that washing machine.
Oh my gosh. That's huge. Yeah. That very well said. That is so well said.
Yeah.
You know, and I think also a lot of people with trauma, even when they're triggered, like you were talking about having high functioning coping mechanisms, which is really depressing because, you know, I know I went on using my coping mechanisms for 4 decades,
yeah.
Very like way, way, way over the top high functioning. And I just assumed it was, you know, I was a very ambitious person and, you know, I liked the performance aspect of what I was doing. And it turns out that no, going home and then having a bunch of wine after a very high functioning day at the studio, kids, doesn't mean that, like, that I'm doing any better in the washing machine than anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people's coping patterns just attune to the society better than others. And it's very easy for you to take that personally against yourself one way or the other. Yeah.
That's very true. Yeah. Oh, self-blame, victimhood. We're going to talk about that as well today. Mm-hmm. Yay. Well, I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm going to pull up my notes because I know that there were specific things that I wanted to get to. So if I had a title for this episode, I would just call it Patterns in This Life and Beyond.
So
the physical world's influence, like our biology, our life experience, like whatever's happening in our meat suit, that phrase, our body keeps the score, that amazingly everybody knows now, even though that book only came out like 6 years ago. I think people really understand now what that means. So huzzah. I remember like listening to that book. I was driving back from a residency I was teaching at, and I had 5 hours in the car to kill. And this book was, I think, 9 hours. And I think I got to hour six and I was triggered so badly that I couldn't listen to it anymore. Because I was like, this is my entire life. Holy Toledo, this guy like nailed it, absolutely nailed my entire experience. So those of you who maybe aren't, as connected to your trauma patterns and the origin of the trauma patterns, the body keeps the score. Bessel van der Valk, I think his name is, doctor. Yeah, that's the jam, you guys. That's a really, really great starting point. And the thing lots of information, but again, it was very much about like this world. And it wasn't until I started combining, listening to the people who had a lot to say about the meat suit biological words experience, but then also listening to the spiritual guides, that I was able to make genuine progress. So we want to talk about both, that we can figure out what our patterns are based on life experience and, to some extent, like, the genealogy that we're born with, the epigenetics that we're working with. But again, like, if the same pattern keeps happening, but you've been in therapy for 25 years or whatever, it's not this world. There's something like in the etheric realm that is blocking you. And there's patterns and contracts operating at that level as well, that if you can clear those, then not only do you never have to deal with them again in this or any other lifetime, but it also allows you to, again, take that ownership of what the concept is, and internalize it and really actually create bodily healing from whatever your patterns are. That's been my big trip for the last 5 or 6 years. And Jenny, you're in this space too.
Yeah.
Can you throw in?
I think I'm in the like new aspects of this space and like understanding karmic energy and understanding outside spiritual influence is very new to me. And it's also because it's new to me, it's hard for me to like trust, if that makes sense, where you're like, oh, trusting that this is actually working, that if I have some so-and-so negative guide that's attached to me and then, I'm able to clear that entity out, that now those issues that I've been having that were supposedly related to that guide are actually going to be gone, And I also feel like there's a tendency to want to cling to things that you've known for a while, especially if your spirit has known them for a while and your soul has known them for a while. And if this is an energy that I haven't cleared since so-and-so past life, such a long time ago, I think removing that energy is going to be somewhat shocking to your system and to your soul and almost a grief. And that in itself is a process. So yeah, understanding spiritual health is a different animal completely. And it's very important and has been very fruitful, but is also still very daunting to me.
Yeah, I think it is daunting, in the sense that I think that we aren't capable of doing it.
Yeah.
But hey, guess what? Everybody's psychic. And when you learn certain tools, and there's a whole huge range of tools in this space, but you figure out what works for you, and then suddenly you are starting to see results. So I'll give you a quick example, even though this is the stuff we want to talk about like at the end of the podcast. So there was a, I trade healings because healers need healings. So I have a whole team of people that we work on each other, because you can't always do all of your own stuff. And, you know, like financially, I've always really struggled, which is not at all unusual for, you know, very sensitive people. And it's really not unusual for people with PTSD. It's actually one of the hallmarks of people with PTSD is that we just don't get money. We just don't. And there's a whole episode in that too. And maybe we'll get to that at some point. So I was really struggling. I was like, okay, like it's time, you know, I've done all this other work. Like I want to be able to receive it. And, you know, the, all of the feedback kept coming back to, was, you know, two things. One was that from the trauma piece, you know, when you don't experience love as a kid, like it's hard to experience love as an adult. And guess what? Money is just an energy, and it can be a very powerful and helpful, like, you know, being able to pay your bills is like, self-love, yeah. For goodness sakes, which, you know, blew my mind that somehow I was punishing myself for the sins of my parents by keeping myself broke. I mean, blew my mind when I understood that, because I thought it was just the world was against me, victimhood, yay. So my friend did a healing on, she was like, oh no, this goes back into past life stuff. So let's clear out the karma from those past lives. And Jenny, I'm not kidding you. In a week's time, I had four deals come in worth tens of thousands of dollars. But here's the hook. None of those deals have actually signed the paperwork. So I'm like, great, we cleared the karma, but for some reason, like it's still not coming in. So that tells me, so you're talking about like, you know, what can you believe? I believe that her clearing worked, but maybe only 80%. And now there's something else I have to go in and remedy so that I can receive, you know, this material stuff. Have you ever had an occasion like that?
You know, I think sometimes, because I'm so up until, because the spiritual clearing and the spiritual healing side of things is so new to me. And up until now, I've very much existed in the space of the other aspects, the emotional and the physical. So that when the time does come to spiritually heal, I'm like fighting it, kicking and screaming, you know, where like we'll get together and I'll be in a really bad space and you'll be like, well, let's like clear out some of your energy. And I'd be like, no, this is ridiculous. That's not what this is going on here. Like, this is other things. Like, that's insane. And then you do it, and I'm like, dang it, I feel better. So it's like, yeah.
And we have to relearn that over and over and over and over and over again. Because especially people with trauma, the trauma is like, no.
I know what I'm talking about. It's not that. Yeah. So
how dare you?
I feel like, knowing that it doesn't work 100% and that I could do because like, I feel like for me, the issue has always been doing the spiritual side of things where it's like, yeah, it's not going to work 100%, but gosh darn, that 60-70% that it is going to work would be very helpful for addressing that last 30%, you know, and that's actually what I've been needing. And then suddenly the last 30% feels a lot easier where it's like, oh, now I just need to go clean my car. And now I have the spoons to do so because I got rid of this horrible ghost that was attached to me that was making me feel sad, or in past life I did this and now I've undone that. So
yeah. And that's it, you know, and then we have to do it over and over and over again. Cause unfortunately, yeah, this is another thing I totally want to talk about is like consciousness shifts. Lots of people go through their whole lives only operating from whatever programming they were given. And I'm not going to say all programming is bad. I mean, there are functional families out there. Every now and again, I meet one and it just freaks me out. Gosh, it just freaks me out. And I'm not saying that they don't have their issues and they don't have their fighting or whatever, but you know, it's a family of people who are genuinely, you know, wanting the best for each other, and they yeah. work hard to help support each other's needs, and like the kids don't feel neglected, or, you know, like, or they can't go home because it's too scary, you know, like functional.
Yeah.
And those people have great programming. Like, they're going to grow up to be people who, you know, have good self-esteem and can make better choices for themselves, who will partner in a healthier way, whatever. But, you know, that said, like, I also feel like going down that road makes it sound like, you know, like those of us with trauma, you know, we're, again, it's the victimhood thing. It's the, you know, it's the woe is me thing. But like, that's legit. It's yeah. legit to feel bad yeah. when you have crappy programming running the show, which then brings us back to not thinking that you can actually overcome any of it. And like you said, it's a cycle, round and round we go.
Well, or you're on the other end of the spectrum where, you know, you have spent so long not being comfortable with the victimhood mindset. Excuse me. You know, and like, for me, it was really hard to come to terms with the fact that I have CPTSD and that I have had a lot to deal with in my life, when to me, I was always under the impression that I had it pretty good. And so then now, when you're trying to allow yourself to heal that victim mindset, because there's stuff going on, excuse me. oh my gosh, I need more water. Because there's stuff going on, or like, you know, because so-and-so needs to get cleared out, you're still just like, but like, I'm not the victim, you know? And so, yeah, it's like yeah. one or the other you latch onto is, and it's hard to find that middle ground.
Yeah. And, you know, on top of that, we have an entire media machine that has been built specifically to support our economic system of capitalism. So you're constantly being told, you know, that if you don't, I don't know, have this kind of a lifestyle, that somehow you're failing. I mean, capitalism is responsible for as much bad programming as any set of parents out there, because we can get trapped in making money our success or failure markers. And then when we see other people who are successful in the materialism space, you know, it can be very confusing for us, because we, you know, we're not necessarily thinking like, well, I'm a bad person, so therefore I'm poor, which is what the, you know, the messaging tends to be. You know, I'm failing, and there's a, you know, an ethical value set attached to all of that. So, you know, classism ends up being one of the nastiest pieces of program that we end up carrying around. And then, of course, media goes into lots of other messages that we're being told. You know, certainly our, you know, caste system stuff, appearance stuff. Yeah. Well, how many followers do you have? Like, how popular are you?
Well, and like, I don't know, when you think about spiritual energies, and like the idea that I've come to recently is that areas will have a spiritual energy with them in that area, and that all the people who are in that area are going to be afflicted and or intertwined with that energy. And if you think about America as a whole, and then capitalism, and apply the patterns conversation to that, there's so many patterns spiritually and also physically that we have been constantly forced to into this society under capitalism, not just with money, but with gender and with self-image. And now those patterns are starting to break a little bit for us, and our image of America is starting to break. And it's chaotic, and it's upsetting, and it's hurtful, and it's traumatizing in its own way. And it's coming, it's sowing all of these oats that we've just been, you know, it's reaping all of these oats that we've been sowing for so long, that it's really just hard to make heads or tails of it, other than, oh my gosh, like, this is bad. Capitalism has hurt us. Capitalism has forever damaged my self-image, you know, and how I perceive myself, to the point of like, walking by a mirror hurts me, you know, like, capitalism did that to me. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot to reconcile with your soul. It's a lot to fight against and try and maintain footing in.
Right. Yeah, that always made me think of like what are some of the best formative experiences can a person have to help break up some of the patterning from childhood? And I had a number of friends that did Peace Corps. And I'm not going to say like, oh, it made them hyper functional people, but it changed exactly what you were talking about. They understood that the way of life in America is just one way to be human. And then they also understood that there was choices out there that they could, that they could go and experience other people's, cultural programming, and whether or not they ever internalized it or not. I think that, one of the jokes is always like people move to like Costa Rica and they just sit around the beach and like surf and hang out and we laugh at them. Like somehow they have become worse human beings. It's like, no, they've just adapted a different pace and a different cultural value set. Right. So I would encourage people to like, don't stay where you're at. Yeah. If you can possibly move somewhere that has a different enough culture, it'll at least, this is what education does, right? Is its whole purpose is to open minds, but not everybody has money for, for college. So, hey, why not just move somewhere and get your mind blown?
Gosh,
take a different trip.
I won't lie to you. I really hope that's not the actual solution to a lot of the problems I'm facing is just moving. Cause like, it's so much moving to another country and changing your life, maybe it's just another state, but that's a lot too. That's a huge shift, and that's a huge consciousness shift. And I think because we're talking about patterns and consciousness shifts and like actually shifting those patterns is something that will only come if a good amount of you wants it, I think, whether you are actively seeking it out or not, your spirit wanting it. And I worry about how much of the change that I actually want. Like, I don't want to move out of this country. I don't know why I don't. I don't understand that at all. But like, it's like, how do we experience those consciousness shifts that we so desperately need when we don't know how to make ourselves want them,
Ooh, that's so interesting. Another pattern, right?
Yeah.
So let's shift gears a little bit. So, cause I do think fundamentally this is all about a consciousness shift. Like, so the different things that can create a consciousness, my words are hard for me today. Consciousness shift. And maybe it's a generational thing also, Jenny, because like all Gen Xers, like all of my friends who had access to these resources, man, they all were going abroad for a year. It was odd not to seek out global travel, whether it was through a school program or, whatever. I had friends who would teach English in China, for example. Just to have that experience, because you come back really different. And maybe that was our shortcut to a consciousness shift because none of the rest of the stuff existed.
Well, and now the
resources. So our Gen Zers just,
Well, now the resources to do that. Cause like a year is one thing. Permanent is another. Like I would totally go somewhere abroad for a year. I mean, maybe I would leave a lot of friends behind, but but the resources and the ability to do that either A, are a lot less there for my generation than they were, or B, we perceive them as being a lot less there, and maybe an aspect of both, because I sure as hell don't have the money to travel abroad for a year, and I don't know how I would get that kind of money.
So then the alternative is... Well, there's many alternatives, but therapy.
Yeah.
So the things that get you out of your ego fastest to me is when you are so far out of your comfort zone that you now have to park all of your you know, perceived understandings about how the world works and be quiet and listen and watch, and then either draft what is happening around you or create something kind of new out of it. And no, you absolutely don't have to move into the moon to do that. But again, it's part of the understanding, you know, what kinds of things you're working with. I actually went to one of my favorite, the meat suit folks that I follow, besides Dr. Bessel, the guy who wrote the Body Keeps the Score. I listened to a lot of Dr. Gabor Mate, M-A-T-E. He blew my mind. Boy, howdy, did this guy bring just a lot of knowledge in, and the way he delivered it, for whatever reason, I was able to, you know, internalize it. And then another guy named Patrick Tehan, who's also a trained counselor. He specializes in CPTSD. And when I recently had a major triggering in CPTSD versus PTSD, I was like, what is happening? This is different. I don't know what's going on. And he was the guy that I turned to. And, you know, and there's listen lists, right? So one of the things that he does is he'll actually tell you some of the things that might be going on with you that demonstrates that this trauma patterning is what's active.
Yeah.
And we're mostly going to talk about trauma people because that's our that's our experience.
Yeah.
So off the top of your head, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but do you have certain things that you know? You know, like for me, like, man, if I'm angry, I'm triggered because I just don't. I used to live in rage 24/7. Mm-hmm. Like I was very, very, very good at rage. And then when that got turned off, now I know to pay attention to it. If I get really pissed, then I've been triggered somehow. Do you have things like that that you pay attention to?
Yeah, I mean, any extremes of emotion, especially having bipolar, you know, and not being able to stay in that baseline 9 times out of 10 means I'm triggered by something. Anger, mm-hmm. absolutely, and just having a short fuse or having a short depression fuse and being able to slip into that void really quickly. I just think it's hard sometimes because it's like, oh, well, I know I'm triggered right now. It's great. Like, what do I do now? You know, which goes back into what we were previously talking about. But yeah, there's definitely some things where I'm just not acting right. I'm not feeling right. Something must be going on. Jessica Lignato helped me have the terminology of I'm activated, you know, and like, oh, I'm in an activated mindset. Maybe things aren't the best and I can't operate the best right now. And so I need to respect that space and just taking the time to respect it is a whole other thing.
Yeah. And we'll get there, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not entirely in this podcast, but I don't know. So some of the things that we've talked about is like addiction issues. If I'm overspending, then I know like, okay, pay attention to that. Like I don't drink, like I don't have the urge to drink anymore. Drinking used to be very much like number one on the coping mechanism hit list. And then I healed that, by the way, in a spiritual healing, I healed my drinking. So now if I find myself drinking, I know it's because I'm not doing a good job of modulating my emotions and, you know, I'm triggered somehow. Did you say you had some addiction stuff as well?
Yeah, I overeat a lot. And just eating in general has always been really hard. So that's also something, you know, and that one's tough because ADHD also naturally means you're constantly seeking out the stimulation because you are naturally understimulated as a human. And so then it's like, oh my gosh, am I triggered or am I just low dopamine, you know? And I guess it's probably fair to say maybe both, you know, and that one's contributing to the other and vice versa. But yeah, my eating habits are really, really bad. If my wanting to veg habits are really, really bad, where I just want to suck up into a ball, you know, and with that and the eating, it's hard because obviously I need a minimum. Like I have to eat, I have to relax, I have to veg for a little bit, but knowing that threshold of when am I going too far? Am I seeking it out too much right now? Why am I seeking it out so much? Yeah, tough conversations to have.
Yeah, so it's not just that we recognize it. It's also then, okay, so which part of me is triggering this?
Yeah.
And then the tools that are associated with that thing, can I deploy them? Can I just give myself the grace to say, hey, I'm going to lay on the couch today and play video games or watch Gilmore Girls or whatever it is that we're doing? Yeah, because I think we also, you know, then we feel guilty. Like guilt is a big piece of it. Shame is a huge piece of it. Because then we're like, oh no, we're not behaving the way we're supposed to behave, whatever yeah. that means.
Yeah.
Even though we haven't probably ever behaved the way we were supposed to. Because, you know, trauma disrupts a lot of that. You and I have talked about this before. That's like, you know, I have a joke because that's what Gen Xers do. We make jokes about our trauma that I don't have a personality. I have a collection of coping mechanisms. Mm. Yay. So trying to weed through those things so that I can get back to something or get back or initially make contact with something that is more authentic. But would I even recognize what that authenticity is? Because all I am is a collection of symptoms.
Yeah.
Pattern triggering, you know, and then judgments based around it.
Well, and it brings the question of like a baseline, you know, and like if I have a spiritual baseline as a person or an emotional baseline, and when I've been out of touch with that idea of a baseline for so long, possibly many lives, it's like how do I return to that? And I guess you kind of just have to create a new one, like create your own baseline of what would feel better and what would make you happier and feel more comfortable. And so when it comes to CPTSD, that's not only unlearning, it is rebuilding in a way that, yeah. you know, because like, what did you say at the beginning when we were still doing our energy clearing? You said the base spiritual blueprint or something like that.
The divine blueprint. Please return me to my divine
blueprint. Yeah, the divine blueprint. It's like, it feels like that's the baseline. And it feels like that is mm-hmm. something that we've been so out of tune with for so long, especially in this society, that getting back to it feels just like, you know, walking that invisible bridge at the Last Crusade, you know, where you're just like, I don't freaking know how to do this. Where is it? And the bridge isn't straight either.
I don't know Yiddish. Yeah. Like, I don't know the alphabet.
Yes, exactly. And it's just, you know, trusting yourself to do that, trusting that that's what you need to do, trusting that you have the ability to do that comes only yeah. after a certain amount of self-love is built again, and rebuilding that self-love is also really hard. So yeah, I think getting people back into their divine blueprint and understanding the divine blueprint takes a lot. It takes a lot. And it's really, really hard to do in this society at large right now, especially
and then we today. Can't hold it.
Mm-mm.
You know, like to have those moments of consciousness shift, you know, where you're just, man, you're just high as a kite, man. We've all had this where I used to love, how I used to love amusement parks. Like roller coasters were my jam. And it was probably because my adrenals were already so spiked all the time because I was always, always, always in fight or flight that only something as extreme as a roller coaster could sort of get
yeah.
me higher.
Yes.
And I knew fundamentally I was safe. I mean, like, you know, mostly Six Flags. So like maybe 90% safe.
It's out of my control regardless.
Yeah, there you go. If I die on this roller coaster, at least it's a cool way to go out. I've made my peace with what's happening here. But like to, you know, and for other people, it's like drugs, right? It can be cocaine, but it can also be, you know, hallucinogenics, you know, LSD or whatever, where it again, it gets you up and out of your programming and it connects you to something grander. By the way, going to church can do this for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like religion is absolutely a place where the hope is that you're connecting to a higher energy. But then like after church, like then you go outside and then everybody's just human again, yeah. And you revert back to yourself. So how to connect to that higher level of being and then hanging on to it is the battle. And it's been the battle since humans really, you know, got to this point where we understood that we were more than just a meat suit.
Yeah. Well,
you did not grow up with religion. Is that, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I did not grow up with religion. I mean, I grew up on the outskirts of it. Like my family is Catholic. My mom or Christian.
Adjacent.
Yes. But my mom, she never forced that on me. She always was, cause she was always just like, not necessarily for her. And so because of that, she never forced it on me. So I got to be on the outside looking in of it a lot. So it never really resonated or connected with me. I will say though, I think cause August, I did start microdosing a bit with some mushrooms, like really, really microdosing.
Can you explain what microdosing is?
Yeah. So microdosing is when you take a really, really, really small fraction of what would be considered a normal dose for a drug. So in my case, it is psilocybin mushrooms. I am doing them in the form of a chocolate bar. And normally when people trip, you'd have maybe a gram, gram and a half to 2 grams. I am doing 0.18 and I will just do it for a day and then maybe a couple days in a row and then I will take a break. And it wasn't until I started doing this because I've had mushroom trips in the past, but they've always been really difficult and anxious for me to get to the point of like, I'm working through something. So now I'm starting to do them and it's just like, oh my gosh, it's that rewiring. It's that consciousness shift that you need to bring yourself out of yourself for a moment and look at the pieces that are in front of you and be like, oh my gosh, like, what a mess, you know, like, no wonder this whole time. So, but like, you know, like you said, staying in that is its own journey. And like, great, I can microdose mushrooms and keep a regular schedule, but that is also taking new medications. There are side effects, there are downsides, there are situations I want to avoid. And so even in that situation, it takes regulation and it takes practice and time. And so doing it without outside tools, it's nearly impossible, I think, you know? And I think a lot of us I think the reality is that a lot of us are capable of these consciousness shifts. We just don't freaking have the right tools that we need. And we don't even know what those look like for some of us, you know?
Are you saying that roller coasters aren't the answer?
Hey, you know, if I could drop 40 pounds, roller coasters might be the answer, but I don't freaking fit on them anymore. So that tool has been taken away from me.
Darn it. But you bring up such a good point. It's like we can recognize the different symptoms of when we are dysregulated, you know, when our patterns are running. You know, like, so I'm just going to name off a couple more really quick, just so we can kind of move past that, like button that up and move past. Hypervigilance, huge for a lot of us. And this is, some people just describe it as like waiting for the other shoe to drop. For me, it was literally feeling like I was being watched at all times. Yeah. So it was the psychic hypervigilant, but it was also the meat suit hypervigilance because I was being watched all the time. And so are you. I was just really aware of it and couldn't figure out like how to turn that off or how to create boundaries. Speaking of boundaries, oh my gosh, for so many of us with CPTSD, like we can't say no to things. Like the guilt is just horrible. Like we cannot set boundaries. And then go into the next level of that, which is you know, we become conditioned to chaos, where that just feels like the, you know, like this is very familiar. Chaos is the way it's meant to be. And then we can't identify red flags in other, in our own behavior or in other people's behaviors. So, you know, like dating can be really, really hard because what other people would look very quickly at and say, well, that's, you know, that's a no-go. Like, you know, that's a red flag. You shouldn't do that. The rest of us are like, I don't see, like, what's the big deal? I don't understand. You know, I have a friend who stayed with a man who, and this became, like a family tradition, is, you know, you get together for the holidays and then they would reminisce all the times that the father in the family almost got them killed because he was such an adrenaline junkie. So like learning to fly a plane, but then almost crashing it five or six times with his family on it. You know, driving in the worst possible weather, but hey, I'm a really good driver. So what's the big deal? Like I'll get us there. And just this endless list and they would laugh and laugh and laugh. And at the beginning, I mean, Jenny, I used to laugh with them because like, again, conditioned to chaos. And I remember I understood that I was starting to heal because then when they started on this weird family trauma bonding thing, I was like, none of this is cool. Like none of this is cool. I'm out.
Yeah.
And I just didn't find it funny anymore. And I just found it horrifying and sad. So there you go. Like there's an example of like, oh, look, I am making some progress here. Let's see, we've talked about like the inner critic. Oh my God. Like, I don't even want to go back to that one. Cause that's just endless. One of the things, and this might be a little bit of a science thing to talk about. So, you know, if you have a spike, like a lot of us have been depressed since childhood, people with CPTSD, we just have like a general level of depression that we're working with all the time. And then part of the job is to identify when the depression spikes. So that's our trauma pattern, you know, being triggered. And then the counterbalance of that is that we lose interest in the things that we used to, you know, that used to bring us joy. And a few years ago, I found out that part of the problem that's happening there is the body reads danger. It's a cortisol spike, right? It's a, you know, adrenaline spike. It's a, like all of those chemicals that tells us when to run happens when we're in danger. But guess what? It's the same chemicals that are released when we feel joy.
Yeah.
So when our body is trying to protect ourselves, it shuts off both sides. So we can't identify danger, but we also can't identify joy. God, that sucks.
That's been the story of my freaking life. It's so long.
I'm so sorry.
Well, and that's just such a like a thing in so many mental health things as well. Like, you know, obviously I can speak to depression because the depressed one, but like when you're in depression, you're in depression. You're not happy and you're not scared either. You know, you're not going to get fueled by these deadlines that you know you should. You're just existing because all of it's been taken from you, you know, and you're like, how the hell do I get it back? And sometimes you get it back, but it's only for a little bit. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And that consciousness shift, right? Like, so when you can actually connect, like roller coasters felt like joy, but it's not, it's literally you're in terror that you're going to die. But like my body interpreted that as like, you know, a banging good time.
Lies.
Yay.
It's because I like feeling
also
like a
driving
bird.
Dangerously. Yeah. I'm flying. I used to be that kid on the swing set that would go way, way too high. Too. Because it made me feel something. Mm-hmm. Who knew? Mm-hmm. Who knew? Also, it's borderline, you know, it's self-endangerment. But for me, it was the 70s. So nobody was like, you stop that, little girl.
All of the,
mostly it was like, gosh, I wonder if she can hang on.
All of the 70s was self-endangerment. So that doesn't surprise me.
Yay. And look at me and I'm laughing. Trauma pattern response. Look what I survived. Woohoo. Yes. So, so to kind of, you know, to gather all of that up and be like, okay, well, what do we do with it? I think there's like, you can't meditate or pray away PTSD. You can't talk therapy it away. So this goes back to us, you know, first off, understanding that there's been enough patterns handed off to us, and it doesn't have to be super extreme. You know, it could be more minor things, and it could be also like very situational. Like, for example, I have a friend who the houses that she was growing up in caught fire. And it wasn't a huge fire, but like she was a little kid. So it was, you know, it was horrible for her. And she grew up with such a, is there a word for fire phobia? There should be.
I'm sure there is. I don't know what it is.
Sure there is. Yeah. So whatever that is. And as she got older, it got worse and worse. Which is also a thing, you guys, like your responses, your phobias can get more and more exaggerated.
Yes.
You know, if you have like OCD, it can get worse as it goes, because it's not being addressed or managed. And now even more life experiences compounding on top of it. And she eventually figured out, she worked with a psychic in her 30s and found out that she had been that she had died in fires multiple times in her past lives.
Wow.
So even though it was a small little house fire, it didn't matter. It's still a pattern that resides in her body. So the same thing as, you know, the body keeps the score, the spirit keeps the score. And then that spiritual download comes into the body. And then here we are, terrified of what we're terrified of, not because necessarily something happened in this world, but because things happened in previous lives. And then the pattern comes back. You could say that she was sort of, you know, destined to have this confrontation with fire. And guess what? She is going to continue to have this confrontation with fire in every life she lives until she learns to clear the karma.
Yeah.
So on one hand, you have the remedies in the mind. You know, maybe it's psychedelics, maybe it's, I don't know, you discover ska. Don't judge, but like ska can be really...
Gwen Stefani.
Elevating. You know, you talked about going to raves. You know, there's all of these things that, you know, can help your body create some space and create, you know, and to create some space in your brain as well. And in that space, that's where the healing can happen. But first you have to recognize, then you can create the space, and then it's healing time. Great. But like, what happens if you have stuff going on in past lives that is interfering, or if there are literally entities hanging around you, heavy energies that are interfering with your ability to even like to be here, to not be disassociated all the time, to not be hung up on what's happening on the etheric planes? Yeah.
I don't know.
You've had some.
Yeah. I feel like sitting with things for a while helps. You know, I've always viewed, like, because this is a two-prong, and I know we're at the end, and you and I are horrible at wrap-ups, but, like...
We are.
It's so funny. I feel like there's a two-prong question of this, of, like, what to do in the moment and what to do in the long run. And the long run is about engaging in those conscious shifts constantly, and mm-hmm. having to readjust yourself to those consciousness shifts until you're able to finally freaking clear out that karmic energy, either through yourself or through another means. But I think the short run of it is the hardest part, because the short run is the uncertainty. The short run is the, like, what the hell do I do right now? And I've always, I don't remember where it came from. I really don't. I've always loved the idea of viewing emotions like clouds, or like an animal that you're seeing in the woods, you know, where you just allow it to exist and you marvel at the fact that it's there. You recognize why it's there, and you recognize the purpose that being and that entity serves. And then you allow it to pass as it needs to, you know, or you just allow it to carry on its way. and sitting and actively recognizing while doing nothing, I think is what's hard sometimes, you know, is because sometimes you can't engage in that consciousness shift. Sometimes you can't allow things to change in that moment because you don't have the means, you don't have the tools. I don't have the ability to travel to Scotland for a year. Oh my God, if I did, I'd probably come back a completely healed woman, you know? But like, I don't have
the time. You and all the other Americans who are over there being like, Scotland is the shit. Oh, I'm sorry, the meow meow.
I'm glad it wasn't just me, but like, just sitting with it. And like, there's so much tendency to fight or to push down or to explode because the pain hurts and the emotions hurt. And sitting with it is not only uncomfortable at times, it's freaking unbearable. But getting better at doing that and getting more comfortable with doing that, practicing that. And I'm not just meaning meditation. I think it is a form of meditation, but I think just being still and just being with it, you know, in mindfulness, it's hard. It's so hard. It's demoralizing. It's painful. And it's unfortunately really, really necessary.
Right. That's really beautifully said. I'll have days where I won't be able to activate myself, you know, and get myself to go to work. I mean, we all have days like that, right? But then it'll feel, instead of it feeling like, yeehaw, I'm taking a day off. Look at me. I'm spoiling myself. It'll be like, oh my God, even TV is boring me.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing, like I can't leave the house. I'm stuck. And then you realize that that's actually what your job was for the day, was to sit in exactly that non-performative, not getting your coping mechanisms revved up and going. Although some might say boredom is also a coping mechanism, but not for me. And if it is, then it's a new one for me. Terrifying. So I think this is, you know, this is the ongoing conversation with us, is recognizing, you know, the things that are firing us up amongst ourselves, amongst our community. And then the things that we do, you know, that actually create some remedy within it. But I got to tell you, my big goal, and this is probably a different, I would love to do a past life reading on you live. Let's do an episode.
Yes, please.
I love doing past life readings because they always demonstrate that there was precedent for whatever it is that you're going through. It's been happening before, and there's messages in it and there's advice in it, because it's not me pulling up the past lives. It's your higher self telling me which past lives to tell, you know, to the person that I'm reading, my client or whatever. And invariably, like, I'll be able to draw some correlations, but they'll be the ones who are like, oh my gosh, you know, this, like, I never really understood this and now I do. And they get all kinds of, it's like this massive, massive download. And it's something that we've all done, whether, you know, we're new souls or old souls, who cares? There was lots and lots of living that was happening before this. And it did set up some patterns. And sometimes those patterns have to be recognized and they have to be disrupted, or else we're just going to do it again and again in this life and in the next life. So my big thing is karma clearing, is to take out the lessons, you know, that we're here to, it's like, yep. I learned that lesson very well. Thanks so much. Done now. And then working on it on all of those different levels that we talked about, the body, the mind, you know, the spirit, the soul. And then buttoning up those past lives, especially the origin past lives, where like the very first time a trauma has set a pattern of behavior or expectation, and then declare that. And I'm telling you, like, I can feel it in my body that things are different now, that I will never again be triggered by XYZ. That I have resolved whatever issues I had around blah, blah, blah. It works. It really, really works, but it's a lifetime experience. And I'm glad I get to share with you.
Yeah. And I'm really grateful to have you as a friend and mentor to help me learn this stuff, because this is definitely my path as well. Yeah, thank you for this wonderful episode today, Trey. I came into it not feeling great, and I feel a lot better now. So this was a good episode.
And that's the best part.
Yeah.
Sometimes the consciousness shift is hanging out with a friend.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, my dear. Well, cheers.
Cheers. Meow, meow.
Meow, meow.